Exception number 10012, real number 8.
Mr. George Clayton, Reel 8. Why did they call it the Berlin Tunnel? I believe there was a reason they called
well,
it.
Well, I think it was on the... It was... when it was first started with the way, it had been one of the longest tunnels that was ever constructed. And that had been the name for it, you know, because we'd never gone so far underground before as what this Berlin Tunnel was. And it concentrated with some other tunnels that was driving to this Messines Ridge. It was that was in Belgium, and it the whole time to be exploded at the same time, and that was when that explosion was felt in Kent.
Did you have any side galleries on this, or was the Berlin Tunnel just straight in?
Any signs?
Any side galleries or saps, side saps?
Oh no, it was straight ahead all the way. There wasn't any side galleries there. That we went. Well, it meant well, very deep. Do you see? With this big cutting that had gone through some hill, near Hill 60. It meant that we were very deep without sinking for it, do you see? You're going on the railways and the train there, sometimes you'll find, well, the same thing is being done there. They've had to cut through a hill to keep the railways level. They couldn't follow the surface somewhere where there's a big hill, you know, without making cutting. And you see plenty of them when you're travelling in the trail, you see where there's just the earth each side of you, and then you come into daylight when you've got
through. What was the ground like that you were digging through? What was it, clay or...?
It was mainly clay. Yes, it was good to walk in. It was, I remember that, oh my God, they used to keep you going with the bags that was being filled. Yes, it was good going. I think it was all clay. Now, I remember once we moving away from there down the New Chapelle, and everything was chalk there. And we being as far down as 130 feet. Well, I remember once made a dugout there.
That was building dugout.
And it was still chalk. And chalk, well, we used to use the coal miners' picks, what they call the hardy pick. And it was just like your own coals, your own chalk. And we never got through that chalk. I don't know how deep it was, but we being, as I say, I would think 130 feet anyway down. It was still the same as it was about. It used to start about 4 or 5 feet from the surface. You would get the soil, and then there was a bed of clay, and then you stuck the chalk. But how far it went down, I couldn't tell you.
What were you working on there?
What were we working on there? Constructing dugouts. We made some big dugouts.
How did you go about that?
Well, we went down and put it at an angle, and then we, when we'd been satisfied that we were deep enough for it to be shell-proof, you know, we went down for about 100 or 150 feet we'd been down. And then we had to just walk right and left, and oh, some of these underground caverns were meant, they were yards wide, because it didn't require any timber to support the roof. There wasn't any timber required, because it was all in chalk, like a chalk strata, you know. And it, there was some of them, we used to have some Gurkhas in there, they used to bake a Jim Putty's in there. That's a sort of a cake they make, and they used to get it into like a frying pan, and they used to toss them right up, and they would keep that. That's the way the way they turned the other side to get cooked, you know, when one side was cooked, well, they just used to spin the gym patty and went right up in the air, and they would keep it, and it was usually the right way up when it fell. Aye.
How long would it take you to build one of these big dugouts?
Oh, difference. Some of them lasted, I'd say about 6 or 8 months or 9 months before the size they wanted.
You've been working on it for that long?
Yes, working night and day. Yes, there's always the three shifts going 7 days a week when you're on your mining.
Where were these dugouts again? Neuve Chapelle, did you say? I didn't
know. In Neuve Chapelle. That's further to the south from Hill 60. It was.
Where were you based?
The French made an attack upon the Germans there. But the French, that terrible casualties there, Neuve Chapelle. In fact, the man used to say, it doesn't matter where you start to dig here, you dig a Frenchman up. There'd been so many killed, you know. And I remember talking to the Frenchman. He'd been in the Neuve Chapelle attack. And there was a haystack of a farm not far away. And he says that the dead was similar to the haystack. He says that the number of French soldiers was killed there. And he says it was dead bodies were like a haystack piled up there, yes.
And what year do you think you were doing that?
Eh?
What year do you think you were doing that?
What year? I think it was in 1916. I think I couldn't say, mind you, but
I know it's difficult. It's 70 years.
I think it'd be about 16 when Neuve Chapelle went on.
When did you do? You talked to me earlier once about mining and counter mining. Now, when did that come in? Because it didn't come in with the Hooge mine,
and it didn't come in with the Berlin Tunnel.
When was it you did that?
Well, I would think it would be really 12 months later before that came into operation. But the Germans started that first. It was on the pit heap notice, you know, urgently wanted.
No, but when did you start doing it? Because you did the Hooge mine and blew up Hooge, and then you talked to me about the Berlin Tunnel.
Yeah.
But when was it you were actually mining and counter mining? And when were you blowing up the German mines and such like?
Yes.
Saps, as you call them.
Well, there wasn't any counter mining from that big tunnel that we started in at Hill 60.
That was too deep.
Too deep.
So when was it you did? Do you remember where you were when you were meeting the Germans underground?
When it was blown up, I think it would be about the winter of 1916.
What I want to know is when you were involved in underground mine warfare, because you told me about when you were digging unopposed and there were no Germans around under the ground. Yeah. When was it and where was it that you did meet the Germans underground? Was it in the Ypres area, or was it down by Loos? Or
we met them in the Sanctuary Wood. Yes, that's where we first met them. Because the Germans were there before we were. So that would be in 1915. Yes, I went out in 1915, in June 1915. That's what it was, and about a fortnight from leaving me work at the colliery, I was in the front line of trenches in Sanctuary Wood.
But you told me before that you didn't meet the Germans while you were digging the Hooge
site. Oh, no, not the Hooge Chateau. Oh no, but to the right of us, the Germans were mining as well. Oh no, to the Hooge Chateau, it just went straight ahead.
So when did you meet the Germans then? Did you dig out towards them later on?
Yes, Oh, it wasn't long no, the Hood Chateau, we had uninterrupted digging there. It was straight ahead.
What I mean. I want to know when you didn't have uninterrupted digging, because we don't seem to know when that was.
Well, I don't think it'll be a great long time.
It was after.
But it wasn't from the. We started tunneling right to the right of Sanctuary Wood. Canadian miners have been there before us.
Is that Maple Copse?
Maple Copse, yes. And
could you tell me about that then?
Maple Copse, let's see now. No, that was was it? Maple Copse. Aye, that was to the left of Hill 60, Maple Copse. It had been started there with Canadian miners, and that's how it got the name. I think the maple leaf is an emblem that the Canadian troops has, you know, the maple leaf, and I think that's how it got the name of Maple Copse. And that was by Canadian miners. Canadian miners, there was Australian miners, and then there was old British miners, you know.
And what happened at Maple Copse? What were you trying to do in this mine, or sap?
Well, we were mostly on listening there. We had listening posts made, you know. And if we heard the sound of them either digging above us or below us, then we used to get an officer in, and he would sound. He had a gigaphone, like what the stethoscope is to the doctor puts on you, sound your chest, you know. And then he would say, well, you could hear the digging down there. And we had to, they give orders usually to start with the boring machine. That was a machine, it was hand operated.
How did it work? Can you explain how it worked?
Well, it was just turning it, and it used to cut through the strata all right, and it made a hole about, I would say, 6 inches or 8 inches in diameter. And we'll go in then for maybe about, 12 or 14 feet, and then put this torpedo tube in, you know. It was a long cylinder object, like a pipe, you know, and then we pushed it into that hole, and then it was the stem, both with timber and with sandbags. We carried timber in, there was plenty of trees that had been shut down, you know, and we had cross-cut saws. You could saw the timber, these tree trunks into lengths, and that made good timber for the job, you know. We could lace it through the timber that was supporting the roof and the sides, and fasten it in there, and then we carried sandbags in, and just squashed them in from the floor to the roof. There was a detonator put in the first place, you know, and a wire for it, and that was led right to the shaft bottom, right up the shaft, into the support trenches, because when that explosion took place, it used to blow the surface up as well, and that meant that a lot of that earth that was blown up, it came into our own trenches. There's been, of course, everybody was warned to get out the trench, you know, to get away into the salt trenches, and that applied to the infantry men as well. Well, I've known some of our infantry men was killed that way, whether they'd never been informed to get out or been some mismanagement somewhere or other, because the infantry was always notified that we were going to be an explosion and to get out the trench at a certain time. And it was like an earthquake when some of them, I've been there when some of them mines went up, and it was just like an earthquake. And I've seen the earth go up, but that was from the support trenches, you know, told what time it would happen.
What would happen then? Would you go back down the mine to see what had happened? Because you were trying to blow up there a German mine, weren't you?
Often the infantry made an attack on that. These are called fighting for the crater. That was the big hole that had been blown in, you know. And sometimes they were successful in capturing the crater, and sometimes they wasn't. There was still Germans left. They could stop the advance, maybe one. A couple of men at a machine gun, you know, and you can hold a regiment up if you've got a machine gun work on.
But would you make such a big explosion when you were only trying to blow in the German mine? Because you were telling me about a camouflage, weren't you?
Oh, the film didn't disturb the surface at all. Oh, no, that often happened. Sometimes they would blow us up that way. We've had men...
sticking to when you blew them up, when you blew their mine up, and didn't break the surface, what would it be like when you went back underground?
We'd start the tunnel through the debris that was all falling in, you know, with the explosion.
Was that difficult, tunnelling through broken ground?
No, we used to do that regularly, and they did it with us. They've tunnelled into us and shot some of our men, or they've heard them walking, and they put an explosion underneath them, underground, you know, and let that go and kill the old men. There were some belonging to the fence houses was killed that way. And, Bill Bassett, he was killed that way. And he was 60 years of age. And he just received a word. He had a son out there as well, or two sons. But they were in infantry. They weren't near us. And he'd had the chance to go home. There was an order came through. It became known that there was men walking out there, over soldiers, given the wrong age, and you know, I think 45 was the limit, 39 or 45 years of age, that was the limit for a soldier to go on active service or to serve in the army at all, I think. But Bill Bassett... he just got word that he had a son killed that was in an infantry regiment, not near where he was, but he got word from whom that his son had been killed. And dear me, a day or two after that, he was killed. And he'd had the chance to go home because it became known to the authorities that those mines... men serving out in the Western Front on active service right in the trenches that were over 60 or 60 years over.
Why did he refuse?
He had the chance to go home. He wouldn't go home. He said, no, he says, I'm staying here. And he wouldn't go home.
Were there many older miners amongst you?
I wouldn't say there was a great lot, but there was... Quite a few of the men that was over military age. And I think it was so urgent to get miners out there, you know. They would probably know when they were being examined and sworn in that this man was over military age. But they were so keen on getting men there, and they were so urgently required that they just let them go regardless of what age they were. We had some away from here was over military age. There were two men here lived not far from here, I think rather along East Stanley here. Their name was Milburn. They did go home. The Milburns went home. But Bill Bassett and some from Northumberland too, they were staying out there. Oh, yeah.
Were you ever underground when a German camouflage was burned? Were you ever underground when a German camouflage or mine was blown up?
No. No, I cannot say that happened to me.
Did you ever do listening duty?
Ever do what?
Listening duty. Would you be on that ever?
Oh, yes, I've done the listening with a Jaggerphone. And,
what was it like? How did you feel, sat there waiting to listen for the German
doctor?
Oh,
well, it was a funny feel. No question about that. When you heard them walking, there was usually the corporal in charge of the shift. He would get in touch with the officer that was in charge and get him to come in, and he would listen. And if he was satisfied there was German miners walking there, then he issued instructions to get the boring machine out.
You told me that, yes. Well, would you ever hear the Germans stop work? In other words, that they might be preparing to do the same thing. Did that ever happen to you?
No, I think we kept on walking. It's got to be done as quietly as possible, you know.
No, but for instance, when you put the boring machine in and prepared a mine to blow them up,
yes,
they might be doing the same to you. Were you
they've done that. They beat us at it. When we were born for them, they had heard us as well, and we certainly got it that way. There was some chaps from Fence Houses, that's not a great long way. He was killed that way when he had the boring machine in to put a charge into the Germans, you know. But the Germans had heard him walking, and they had a boring machine too. And they'd put an explosive charge in it. Oh, yes, that's happened more than once.
Were you ever in a situation where it was that tense, when you knew it was going to be, it was very close to...
Oh, yes. And you had sandbags, 3 or 4 sandbags across along each boot, you know, each foot, to make no noise, and you hadn't to speak above a whisper. You must speak. Oh, it was a tense situation when you knew the Germans were walking, and you had it. Many times a jolly good idea they were doing the same as what you were doing. It was a race against time, and but it was certainly a tense situation to know that the Germans were digging there the same time as you were.
Did anybody lose their nerve?
Eh?
Did people start to lose their nerve or get tense?
Well, they did. We used to call that getting the wind up. That was the way, and people, the nerves really got the better of them. Sometimes they'd be able to get out of it. When they got fairly got the wind up underground, the time came when they had to come up and get relieved by another one that was on the surface. You say, get them down. Oh, yes, that's happened as well.
Would they be sent home, or what would be done with someone who was properly lost?
Well, I can never mind remember anyone being convicted for it, for that, but there certainly was occasions when they couldn't stand it any longer.
Did you ever lose your nerve or get the wind up, or were you all right?
I can never say I left my nerve. No. Of course, it was a tense situation when you heard the Germans walking, and you were walking something to, operating something to give them the shot first. It was a race against time, and you knew that. It was all in with the job. The whole thing was that way, you know. There was one man trying to kill the other. That was the war, your word war.
Did you get used to that situation?
I think you did. Yes, you got used to it. Oh, I think you were scared mainly the first time before you got your baptism of fire. That's what they used to call it, you know. I remember the first time we went into the Ypres salient. When we got to Ypres, there was a big battery of guns there on the canal bank, you know, the canal bank sort. That was the first time we heard the big guns firing. My God, when they went off, to us then. But if you've been out there a certain length of time, you get you have a good idea. The shells were flying backward and forwards all the time, you know, that you were there. But you had a good idea by the hiss that the shell was making, whether it was going to drop near you or not. And if there was one did drop at my feet once, that was in it sank, no, La Clete, and they turned the guns on during the night, and we were just in bell tents at about 9 or 10 mile behind the trenches, but they had the long range guns on, and there was one of it woke us up, you know, when the shells started. Some of the men was killed in our camp, and a brother and me, we were sleeping together in the one bell tent, and we knew where there was a dugout that had a good deal of cover on it. And when they started, the shells were coming over, we're going to get out of this. And there was a shell burst at my, it didn't burst at my feet, but it fell at my feet. I heard it coming over, and then it blop down. It lifted the earth. It nearly shook me off my feet, but it didn't explode. It was a dud. You see, you can always say if about 10 shells that comes over, there's always one doesn't explode. I can't tell from why, but there was always a lot of dud shells came over from the Germans, and possibly there were dud shells, because we didn't know they used to fall into German lines. We didn't know whether they were exploding or not, our shells, but we knew what theirs were exploding or not. But many a time, I remember there was a big lake. What was it called, that lake? It was, I've seen the German shells going into the lake. We used to say, look at the waste of ammunition, blow the water right up.
That's Zillebeck. Was that at Ypres, Zillebeck, or Zonnebeck?
I think it was Zillebeck Lake, that's the name of it, Zillebeck Lake. They used to, we used to watch the shells going in. Early, just after breakfast time in the morning, you could look out at that a regular time, and they'll maybe give that about an hour's pounding with shells, and nearly all of them was just falling into the lake. Whether they had gotten the wrong wavelength, I can't tell you, but they used to fall into the lake and make the water fly up.
Now, you've said about the first time you heard our guns firing, and you've said about how you got used to German artillery. What about the first time you came under German artillery fire? What did you think of that?
Well, you didn't like it at all. A lot of old fellas had the wind up, you know, but they didn't know what to do. They were scared. But the time comes when you're so accustomed to shells that you know that even you hear them screaming over, but you know whether they're going to come but near this, you or
this,
not.
This first time, you hadn't had any military training, had you? Can you remember the incident when you first came into shellfire?
The first time I was going up.
And what happened? What did the men
that
do?
Was in that was in 1915. In June 1915, there were shells were coming over.
And what did the men do?
Well, some of them they used to fall flat on their face. And it's sometimes not a bad idea to drop down flat. So if there's any... you're a more dangerous target if you keep on your feet than what you are... if you fall flat, that's often. But you get a sense of direction through time. You hear the scream of the shell, and you know by the tune of the screaming of a shell does when it comes. But you know the scream it has, whether it's going to fall near you or go right over your head. Where sometimes, well, you know by the scream of it, that one's not good.
Were you ever under a heavy bombardment? Were you ever under a heavy artillery bombardment? You know, when there's lots of shells falling everywhere around you. Were you ever under that?
Oh yes, we've been a German bombardment. That was sometimes the shells Well, there'll be a bombardment there maybe for an hour.
And what would you do?
Well, we just had to find cover if we could, to get into the dugout. So that's the first thing you try to find a dugout to get under cover. And if you're out in the open, well, there's nothing to protect you, you know, if a shell bursts anywhere near, because the shells, the splinters, that's what... And then some of them were filled with like lead balls. Some of the shells were, and the splinters or them balls went in different directions. And the shell that I was wounded with, it would be a